Cubs beat the Orioles. White Sox lost to Seattle in 10 innings. Tonight, the Brewers play in Pittsburgh. Cubs play the Braves in Atlanta, and the White Sox are off. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service on this Monday, July 17th. They're still telling us it's going to be a sunny day. Pleasant temperatures, a high of 77 degrees. We've had a cloud cover roll in. Wind from the north at 3, humidity 92%. New temperatures are in, now 61 degrees. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the WGTD morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenosians who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Frank Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD over 40 years ago and later served as station manager and a morning show co-host. The morning show is next.
And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Tonight at 7 o'clock at Carthage College, there is a really exciting performance that's going to be taking place, and it may be something that you may want to attend. It's a performance of a delightful musical called Peter Pan Jr., and it is going to be involving the combined talents of some of Carthage's most gifted musical theater students and alums, and some very talented young people from Shanghai, China. It marks a collaboration between Carthage's musical theater workshop and with a school in Shanghai called iMusical Shanghai. So I have six guests joining me today for the morning show. And a couple of them I know very well because they are both among the most talented of Carthage graduates. Maggie Spanuelo is the camp director. So she is heading up this experience, and this is the first time this particular camp has ever occurred. And Tommy Novak is the director of this particular production of Peter Pan Jr. Also joining us is Audrey Wang, who is the director of iMusical Shanghai. So the school in Shanghai, which is bringing these talented young people to the campus of Carthage. And we will be meeting in a little while Lucia, Allie, and Terry, who are in the cast for Peter Pan Jr. Again, it's being performed tonight at 7 o'clock. So we welcome all of you to the morning show. Glad you can be here.
Thank you.
Maggie, tell us how this camp sort of took shape and how this collaboration was possible between Carthage and iMusical Shanghai.
Absolutely. So we performed last year when we were in Shanghai, we performed some of our pieces for iMusical Shanghai, and they loved our production of Seussical, and they wanted to bring their students to learn with us because we were only there for such a short period of time with them. During that trip, they also decided to hire one of our alums, Brittany Coriacci. She has been there since November of this year, choreographing for them at iMusical and working for Audrey. And she comes back, I think, next month. So she has been there for about 9 months. And so we've developed this lovely partnership with iMusical, and they were all able to get here. We have 23 of her students doing Peter Pan, and all of them brought a parent, or in some cases two, in some cases a little brother, with them as well to music theater camp in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
Wow, a long journey for all of them.
It was a long journey.
We should maybe clarify for our listeners, too, that Carthage has an extensive relationship with China, and a number of trips have occurred. And was this the first time you'd made connection with iMusical specifically?
No, I don't believe so. I believe that it has been for a couple of years that we have been going out there and doing performances, as well as, you know, and they, Ricky, who was a exchange student here 2 years ago, knows Audrey. So we were able to foster that relationship through Ricky as well. But we have an extensive network in China. We have traveled to probably 6 or 7 different Chinese cities to perform and meet with students and do master classes. We have Lorian Steinschwaber on our faculty, and about 17 years ago, Lorian went over to China and started teaching the art of American music theater to Chinese students at the Shanghai Conservatory of Music. We can claim at Carthage that we have the person, someone on faculty that basically brought music theater to China for the first time 17 years ago. And so that relationship between Lorian and all the people she knows in China, we were able to also capitalize on as a huge institution that's able to go over there and to fund trips and to sponsor these kids to come see us. So we have a very extensive relationship with the Beijing Dance Academy and the Academy of Dramatic Art, as well as the Shanghai Conservatory of Music, as well as other places as well. So it's just been a really wonderful journey the last several years.
It's been splendid on both sides, and such an exciting point of growth for Carthage, for sure. I'll ask you about the camp in just a moment, but I want to talk to Audrey Wang about iMusical Shanghai. So describe what this school is. How many students do you have, and what do the students there study?
Thank you very much to invite us to come in Carthage College. And let me thank you, Corinne and Maggie and Tommy, to make this kind of relationship with us. And it's a chance for me to bring our 23 or 24, I forgot it's, that. 20.
Well, you have 25 students.
Yeah, I have 25.
Yeah.
The students to coming in Chicago, coming at Carthage College, and learn musical theater for their wonderful director, Maggie and Tommy, and a wonderful vocal teacher like her and Corinne. And for Shanghai iMusical Art Center, it's I built it from 4 years ago. And we focus the children, their age is from 6 to 14 years old. And we just only focus the musical theater. Its reason is I think it's not just only for let them learn the singing, dancing, or acting. It's more let them to learn how to focus, how to concentrations, how to teamwork, how to keep working, how to confidence. So this is, I think, it's our Chinese children more needed. So this is my main call to do the iMusical.
Is there another school in China like it? Do you know?
It's look like similar, but I think it's different. It's we are folks what? For iMusical, we more folks, they are the children, they are imagination, they are creativities, and on their cars, it's not just follow, it's not just copy. So this is a difference for the another Chinese, this kind of schools.
Right.
Yeah.
You can see how it would be very, very valuable. So Maggie, explain what has happened at the camp. When did these young people and their parents arrive from China, and what has been happening?
They arrived on Monday, July 10th. And they are going to perform on Monday, July 17th. And they didn't even have rehearsal on Monday the 10th. They just flew in and went right to bed after we gave them some Durango's pizza. And they started the next morning on Tuesday in rehearsals with Tommy and Katie Schwaber, our choreographer, also a Carthage alum, and learning music with Corinne, our dean. And so they have been working for only 7 days to put up the show tonight.
And this has this been morning, noon, and night?
Morning, noon, and night. Although we do try to put in some social activities like ice cream socials, and our adult students who are helping out with the camp also put on a cabaret for them last Thursday night. So they were able to see the kind of work that we put on here at Carthage, but also in America, how we tell stories, how we include movement in our very simple musical cabarets that we put on at Carthage and in America. But for the most part, they are in rehearsal in the morning. They get a nice little lunch break, afternoon, nice dinner break, and then we're always together in the evenings.
Wow. Tommy Novak, you're directing Peter Pan Jr. Tell us how this show got chosen, first of all. Was this your idea?
Well, it wasn't my idea. It was sort of a collaboration between Audrey and what she wanted for her students and what we could do and accomplish within a week's amount of time. It's to make any cast a week is not enough, right? Even for American casts, it's not enough time to put it together. But we wanted to focus on how they use their brains to make their own choices. Because when you're working at such a fast pace, there's no time to sit down and talk and go through each little moment-by-moment-by-moment process.
And tell them what to do every moment.
Well, and we don't want to tell them what to do every moment. And when Audrey and I met last year in Shanghai, we sat down for lunch, and we talked about iMusical, and we both connected on a level of what we both believe in a teaching core is that so many times with kids, they're told how to say the line, how to move, where they're supposed to hold their hand. And some of that is beneficial. Like in choreography, they have to know where they're holding their hand. But everything else should come from their own brain. They should be given the tools to figure out how they move, how they talk, how they communicate physically. And Peter Pan is a really great way to give different inciting ways for them to talk. You have the pirates, and you have the brave girls, and then you have the lost boys, and then you have the family from London. So each one of them has a different vocal vocabulary, a physical vocabulary, and how when they're all on stage, how they all look different. And even if you are Pirate 2 or Noodles or Starkey or Toodles or Tiger Lily, you all are a part of your group, and you're all important of telling the story. And we've talked about that and trying to really help the kids think for themselves and come up with their own ideas, right? Which I think is just super important, instead of like, say the line like this, right? We want to teach them how to use their voice and how to use their bodies.
Did you cast this, or was this cast before they even got to Carthage?
They arrived on the 10th, and on the 11th, we went through, and they all sang a little portion with Corrine and Lorien. Katie Schwaber, the choreographer, and myself went through and did a couple movement exercises with them to see how they move. And then Corrine, Lorien, Maggie, Audrey, and myself sat down and cast them. Because Audrey has the benefit of knowing them and knowing where they are, what they can succeed at, where they can grow. And so we took the fast assessment that we did, and then what she knows, because she's been working with them for anywhere from 1 year to 3 years since iMusical started, and cast Peter Pan.
Wow. Have you ever had to direct a show with this short a time frame? Is this a first for you?
This short of time frame, I've done it once before. I used to work for a music theater day camp in Buffalo Grove, where we had a one-week session camp. And similar age group. And it takes a lot of pre-planning. You got to make sure you know what you want out of every moment, how the show flows and comes together. It's a lot of pre-production before anyone even arrives. So I've done it once with kids, and I've also done it with Carthage students. When I was here, we put up Seussical in a week. We had seven. It wasn't necessarily a consecutive week, but we had seven days of rehearsal, and then we put up as much as we could of Seussical the musical.
Wow. I think the three young people that we're going to hear from in a moment have pretty good English from just the little exchanges we've had. How about the whole group? Does everybody have a high facility level in English, or is language a bit of a challenge for you as a director, for instance, in working with them?
Everyone's English is at varying levels, but everyone has been super helpful, and they're also, not only are they learning musical theater, Audrey is using musical theater to also teach English, which is a big thing over in China, is that they're learning the art form, but as well trying to learn English in a different way. Instead of sitting there reading books and reciting and learning the language, they're trying to use another way to get into the language. So it's not been difficult. There have been some times where I'm communicating with one of the students, and they look and say, I don't know what you mean, and then I try and find another way, or someone will gladly help and translate, like Audrey has translated a couple things, or some of the students who have better English have translated for the other students. And even some of the kids with really good English, they're learning the art form, so it's not necessarily a language thing, it's I don't know what this moment is. And so just trying multiple ways of trying to get in and communicate. It has been fun and challenging and is exciting, but it's been really great. It's been a learning process for me.
Terrific. All right, let's listen to what these young people have to say. So this is Lucia, and this is Terry, and this is Allie. Okay, everybody's pointing to Lucia, so it sounds like she's going to get to talk first. First of all, Lucia, how old are you?
I'm 10 years old.
10 years old.
Yeah.
And when did you first fall in love with musical theater?
I first fell in love is when I was 8 years old. I went into iMusical and played Oliver Twist and Into the Woods.
Ah, and so you performed in them? You were in the cast for those shows?
Yeah.
What do you like so much about doing musical theater? Why do you like it?
Because I think musical is a makeup with sound and with voice and the mind and the body.
They all work together, don't they?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And what is your role in Peter Pan Jr.? What part are you performing in Peter Pan Jr.?
I perform Liza and the Brave Girls.
Yeah. And one of the Brave Girls. Very good. We also have with us Allie, how old are you?
I'm 10 years old. Yeah, I'm 10 years old.
Very good. And when did you first become interested in musical theater?
Well, I forgot. I think it's when I'm 8 or 7 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I perform Annie, the musical, and there is the second musical, I forgot its name. It have a lot of songs in different musicals, and it combined together. And the third show is, Into the Woods.
Okay.
And I play Little Red Riding Hood.
Oh, okay. Excellent. That's a great part.
Thank you.
And you're a lost boy in Peter Pan Jr.,
yeah.
Right? Very good. And right in the middle here is Terry. And what is your part in Peter Pan?
My part in Peter Pan is Peter Pan.
Well said. How old are you, Terry?
I am 10 years old.
So all of you are 10 years old.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
did you first get introduced to musical theater?
When I was a kid, like about 4, 5, 6 years old, I went to see my first musical called Cat. It's very fun, and I got makeup over my face like a cat, the actors climb up to the seats, and then they kind of teach, well, not really teach, but interact with the audience.
Which
is very fun. Yeah, I like that when I'm a kid.
Cool. So I want to find out a little bit about what you do at iMusical Shanghai. What kinds of things do you learn there? What has it been most important about? Whoever wants to say. Go ahead, Terry.
I learned in iMusical lots of things. First, when I breathed, I used my chest to breathe. Now I know to use my belly.
Ah, so now
that's
you're breathing.
That's a very important thing.
Right, you're breathing lower now than you used to. That's good. Allie?
Yeah, and we learn how to sing better and act more.
Not just stand there and sing, but
but
express something.
And like when I'm acting the Little Red Riding Hood, I'm just Little Red Riding Hood, not myself.
Right, you become the character.
Yeah.
Very good. Lucia, do you want to say anything about what you've learned at iMusical Shanghai?
Yeah, of course. I learned don't stand there and sing. You must act more, and your body will act big, and I learned acting. You must very focused.
Be focused.
Yeah.
Don't let your mind wander. That's right. Did all of you want to come to America to do this camp, or were any of you scared about making this long trip? Allie?
Yeah, I want to come because, like, last year summer camp, I go to Canada's camp, and called Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that camp. I really like that camp. So I wonder if this camp will be better or something, because I've heard of some better college before. And so I come to this camp, and it's fantastic.
Oh, I'm glad. Glad to hear you say that you like it. Were you scared to come here, or you were excited?
I was extremely excited. When I was in last summer, I went to Sheridan too with Allie, and I really like it. I like Canada. It's like a little bit different from America. So I wanted to find out what's like kind of different. I found one thing. Different is that we use public toilets here.
You use what?
Public toiletries here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We do have a few of those around here. That's good. Were you scared to come, Lucia, or were you excited?
Of course I'm excited, but I don't go to Canada's camp yet.
So this was your first time taking such a big trip,
yes,
then?
Yes, because I can learn more things, I think, and learn is interesting things, not boring.
Right. Oh, absolutely. So is this the first time in America for all of you?
No.
The first time you're in the United States?
No, yes.
Yes for Lucia, but Terry and Allie have been in the United States before. On other trips before?
I've been 6, 7, 8 times.
Oh.
Like so much.
Oh, you like it here.
Yeah, this is the first time that I got in America, but it's the first time that I come to this state.
Wow. Very good. Well, I know a lot of people are excited to come and see this production, and we should make sure people know where they should go. Where is the production performance going to be taking place?
It's in the VPAL, which is on the top floor of the Johnson Fine Arts Building. It's right across from the chapel, right next to the recital hall.
Right.
So if you're looking for it, it's near the recital hall across from the chapel.
Or if you know where the art gallery is.
Or the art gallery,
right next to that. Maggie, I have a feeling that it's going to be tough to say goodbye to these young people when this is all done.
I think it's always really hard to leave China when you go there. And I think it's doubly hard when they have to leave you here. We've had 2 years of, well, many years of Chinese exchange students. But the last two we've had students come from Shanghai as well as the Beijing Dance Academy. And so they've been here for 9 months, and then they leave, and you miss them. And obviously children steal your heart the second that you meet them. So there are several of these children that I will miss dearly. But I know that we'll be keeping in touch with Audrey. I know that we have another trip scheduled for May, wherein we will absolutely go and visit and see how much they've grown over the school year with Audrey at iMusical, and to see all the work that we've done here in their characters that they show us next May and in June. But it is always very hard, but that's part of saying goodbye, and it's also part of saying hello.
Absolutely. Well said. Maggie Spanuelo is the camp director for this musical theater camp that's been occurring the past week at Carthage College. Tommy Novak, the director of this production of Peter Pan Jr., Audrey Wang, the director of the I Musical School in Shanghai, and it is the young, talented students from iMusical Shanghai who are in the cast for Peter Pan Jr., Lucia and Terry and Allie. It was great to meet all of you whom I've never met before. Great to reconnect with you, Maggie and Tommy. We hope a lot of people will come to this free performance tonight, 7 o'clock at Carthage's VPAL. And thank you for being part of the morning show, and good luck.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Monday Morning Show on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio. And here is part two of today's program. Some of you may remember a very memorable morning show from a year or two ago, I think a couple of years, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, time flies, when we had a morning show devoted to Mike and Jamie Johnson, who co-own a business here in Kenosha called The Dry Guys. And the reason for that conversation was because Mike and some employees had taken themselves out to the East Coast to assist with the cleanup in the wake of Hurricane Sandy, which wreaked such havoc in the northeastern part of the United States along the coast. And he really faced some very, very intriguing challenges, as did Jamie, his wife, back home, manning the switchboard and trying to help coordinate their efforts to get where they needed to go. I am reconnecting with Mike Johnson for this conversation because, as you can probably guess, he and his employees have been very, very busy in the wake of the devastating floods here in southeastern Wisconsin that hit, of course, the community of Burlington especially hard. And Kenosha as well was hit pretty hard, and other outlying communities as well. And I thought it would be interesting to hear from somebody very much in the trenches, really on the front line of this cleanup effort, to just sort of find out a little bit about the kind of damage that was done by these floodwaters and what is involved in cleaning up in the wake of such a disaster. And Mike Johnson's very kindly agreed to set aside a few minutes in what it has to be an incredibly busy schedule to have this conversation. Mike Johnson, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Oh, thank you, Greg. Appreciate it.
I'm glad we can have this conversation. So how crazy actually is your life right now? I don't mean to imply that the cleanup efforts are by this point done or mostly done. I'm sure there is still work to be done, but I suspect that life isn't quite as desperately busy for you as it was in the immediate wake of the flood.
No, and it's tapered off a little bit. It's still coming in, but not at the volume that was coming in starting early Monday morning. Phone calls started coming in 3:34 in the morning, Monday morning, and for the first 3 days, it was the craziest because we had the initial rain on Monday, and then we had one day's break, and then Tuesday night got hit again with that second storm, and after that, things got even crazier because if you didn't get hit with the first rain, you get hit with the second. And we've been working some long hours, 12, 14-hour days, pretty typical in the first, 3 to 5 days of a storm like this. But we're starting to catch up and starting to get a little bit more organized. And the phones are ringing as much as they were, but they're still ringing. There's still a lot of people that need help out there.
Right. How big an operation do you have normally? And when something like this comes up, I'm curious if you and firms like yours typically reach out and try to sort of bring other people on board, or is it more a matter of just stretching your forces, your normal forces,
as widely as you can with longer hours and shorter breaks. I mean, how does a small company like yours, for instance, cope with something of this scope?
Well, I'm fortunate. I have three divisions to my company, and I got about 25 employees. So when something of this magnitude hits us, we pool all of our resources from my entire company. And, yeah, we're stressed pretty thin. The guys are working long hours, and everybody's doing their part to try and manage and keep up with things. But, you know, companies like ours typically will reach out to temp services and other people that can help out. We have our people that are on staff that are well-trained for doing this type of work, but what we lack is just the manpower in servicing the number of jobs that that come at us. So when you know, when we have the volume of work like this, you know, we try and take our experienced people and we work with temp services and other people that can help out in handling the volume of work.
Right. So when the phone rings off the wall, when you are getting dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of calls in the space of a single day or a couple of days, how do you sort out where you're going to go? Or is it a simple matter of first come, first serve? Or are you somehow gauging the severity of various situations and going to those jobs first? How does that matter get sorted out?
Well, we typically start a list. You know, as people come in, we kind of try and keep things in order of how the calls come in. And it's a tough thing because the homeowners are under tremendous stress during this time. And we fielded well over 100, 150 phone calls this week. And creating a list like that, we try to take people in the order that they call us. And, sometimes, you know, if people have a smaller flood, they have an unfinished basement where it's mainly just concrete, you know, we'll kind of judge, you know, who really needs the help, first as far as, you know, if they have a finished basement and they have a lot more personal items that are going to be affected by it. But for the most part, we try and keep people in the proper order that they call in to help them out. And that's the hardest thing that we face is when you have 100-plus people that are calling and they all want help and we want to help everybody, you know, our job is to help them through this moment and help them through the stress of this. And a lot of that is just answering questions, guiding them through what they can do to start some steps, start, you know, extracting water, start blocking their furniture, protecting their valuables. You know, what can you do until help arrives?
Hmm.
And, you know, as much as we'd want to help everybody, it's just simply impossible. We don't have the manpower or the resources to help that many people. So we do encourage them, keep calling around, call out the companies, and, you know, and try and get that help because, you know, as much as we would like to help everybody, we simply can't. So, but what we do is try to help them with understand what they could do in the meantime until help arrives.
Right. So I suppose a lot of that burden fell on your wife, Jamie, the co-owner of Dry Guys, who is often sort of that front person and the person interacting with the public at that point in the process. I'm sure that this was some of the most important work that you guys were doing, even ahead of the actual cleanup, was, as you were saying, I mean, trying to calm people and offer whatever advice you could in the short term for people to at least begin the process on their own of turning a really bad situation around.
Yeah, Jamie has a very tough job in the office, and any of the office staff that are handling the phone calls. Because what the question that they're faced with more often than not is, when are they going to arrive at my house? When am I going to get help? And it's a tough answer, a tough question to answer, because this type of work isn't something where you just go out there, spend a couple hours, and you're done with the job. These jobs range from a half a day to 2 or 3 days, you know, sometimes to help somebody. So it's very hard to, you know, when you're 50 on the list, to give them any idea of when we're going to be out there and arrive. That's why, again, you know, Jamie helps them with what they can do to start taking steps to protect their property and to start the process of, you know, extracting the water, doing what they can until help arrives, but encouraging them to continue to call other companies and check in, you know, periodically. We go on the list and we check with the people that are on our list to see if they've received help.
Right. So where did you field most of your calls from? Obviously, the most serious flooding was in and right around Burlington, which, of course, is, and you're located here in Kenosha, which saw its own share of course, some serious flooding. Were you dealing mostly with folks right here in Kenosha, or were you also hearing from folks a little further away who were desperate for help?
Yeah, we were getting calls from all over, Burlington, Silver Lake, Bristol. Most of the jobs that we've been servicing have been local because those were the first calls that we got in. And, you know, with those first initial calls, you know, we pretty much, you know, spoke with those people and said we were going to help them. So we were pretty much locked in here in Kenosha with the first volume of people that called in. And that kept us busy all last week right in the Kenosha area. We're starting to get more calls, you know, from the Burlington, Silver Lake, and Bristol, and we're able to start to reach out a little bit more now because we're catching up with the work that we had in Kenosha. But last week we pretty much did Kenosha and Racine were main locations of all the work that we did.
Right. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Mike Johnson. He and his wife, Jamie, are co-owners of The Dry Guys. And among the work that this firm does is clean up in the wake of something like we just experienced in southeastern Wisconsin, widespread flooding. And we spoke with Mike Johnson and with his wife, Jamie, back when they had an experience of doing some work with the cleanup of the victims of Hurricane Sandy. And now we're spending a few minutes talking about what they have been experiencing in the last few days in the wake of the flooding here in southeastern Wisconsin. I'm curious about when you were first fielding these calls, even right here in Kenosha, did you face any issues in terms of actually getting to the places where people needed help in terms of how to navigate the streets and so on? I mean, or did you face any situations where it was impossible or nearly impossible to get to a certain address where people needed help because of standing water and closed streets and so on?
Yeah, we did see that early on, that had there were streets that were blocked off, that we couldn't go one route, just had to reroute and go to a different route. But we didn't have any problems reaching the people that we were going, you know, the appointments we were going to. We did have different areas that were blocked off and had to just reroute ourselves. But for the most part, we were able to get to all the people that needed our help. And we fortunately didn't face the power outages that we faced years ago, about 11 years ago when we dealt with this before. I know there were some power outages, but when we arrived at all the homes that we helped, they had power and were able to, you know, go right to work. We didn't have to work off the generators. So that helped a lot that the homes that we worked in had the power when we arrived.
So typically when you would show up at a home, and I suppose once in a while you were maybe also answering an SOS from a business, typically what would be the first thing that would happen when you or your employees arrived at a given address? What's the first thing that you would have to do?
The first thing we have to do is just kind of assess the source of the loss. Did the water come, you know, it was a sump pump failure and the water came up, you know, through the sump pump crock, or was it a sewer backup? We had a mix of both sewer backups and the sump pump backups. And so when you first arrive out there, you want to determine what sort of the loss you're working with, because If it's a Category 2, which is a sump pump, you handle it one way, and where a Category 3, which is a sewer loss, you would handle it differently because of the level of contamination of the water and the materials that you're working with. So determining the source of loss is the first thing that we do, and the extent of the loss. So how much material and how much of the structure was affected by the water loss.
Right. In most cases here in Kenosha, I am assuming that by the time you would get to a home, the water itself would be gone or mostly gone. But am I wrong about that? I mean, would you often enter a home and the basement would still be filled with water? The water was still there? And if so, what do you do in those situations?
Yeah, that typically happens early on in a heavy rain like this. The first few houses that we get to, they're that condition. They have 3-4 inches of water. You've got carpet floating, items floating in the basement. And when that's the case, when you have that much water down there, all we can do is, what typically happens is their sump pump has failed. So the sump pump crock has filled up, all the drain cowl around the house is filled up, and the basement is now filled up. So there's no place for that water to go. So all we can do at that point is drop in a temporary a sump pump and a hose to pump it outside the home until that homeowner can get a new sump pump installed. And then that water, it'll start to catch up and remove all that water out there. But until that is fixed, you know, we install temporary sump pumps to kind of lower the water level and keep up on all that water that's coming into the home.
Once the water is gone, whether or not it's already drained away or you have assisted in the removal of the standing water, then, of course, what you're left with is quite a mess. What are sort of the technical means by which you go after the typical mess that you are cleaning up, particularly, let's say, in a residence that has experienced this?
Right. Once the water has subsided, whether it's the sump pump, there's a new sump pump, and it's extracted all that water out of the basement, and you're left with that wet carpet and the wet material, the next step from there is to start your extraction of that material. The first thing we typically start is on the carpet and the pad, and thoroughly extracting that water out of the carpet and pad. And we've got machines that heavy extractors that we stand on that kind of squeegee and really get a lot of that water out of the carpet pad. So our first job is to get as much of that heavy moisture out of the home. And then once you get that heavy moisture out of the carpet and the pad, typically we'd remove the pad for sure. If we got to it, got to the home soon enough to salvage the carpet, and it's considered a Category 2, we can extract the water, remove the pad from beneath the carpet, and then dry that carpet in place and save that. However, in a Category 3, which is a sewer backup, that carpet and the pad would be disposed of. But after you extract that water and you remove the pad to dry the carpet, then you're kind of going through the contents. You're getting everything off the ground. You're blocking the furniture. You're going through wet boxes. You're going through any other materials that are affected and addressing those. For boxes, we're transferring the items that are still dry into another clean box and determining whether the wet items are salvageable or if they need to be discarded. But then it's just a matter of going through and investigating all areas of the basement to make sure that we've located everything that is affected by that water. And then once we have everything addressed down that basement and all the water's been extracted, all the furniture and the items have been blocked and stationed more in the center of the basement, then we set up our drying equipment, the air movers and the dehumidifiers, to start the drying process. The air movers are designed to cause that airflow across the surface of the carpet and across the wet walls to force that evaporation from that wet structure, and then the dehumidifiers are there to pull that moisture out of the air and deposit that water elsewhere to start that drying process.
Wow. When it comes to assessing what must be discarded and what is salvageable, is that at all, in a sense, a negotiation with the owners of the home? Or by and large, is that a determination that you and your employees need to make?
It's a combination of both. We typically, when we have items that are damaged, we will create a couple piles where we've got dry items in one area, and then we have wet affected items in another area, that we many times will stage those wet items and ask that homeowner to determine what items they would like to salvage and what items that we can discard. In terms of category two, which is just, you know, they're wet items and they are salvageable, most items can be cleaned or maybe dried out, and we can save those items if the homeowner would like to save it. However, in terms of the category three, which is sewer backup, you've got items that are grossly contaminated, and if they're porous in any way, where that is soaked into that item, those we recommend disposing of, you know, throw them away, because at that point you can't sanitize those items because it's soaked into it. So it's a discussion that we have with the homeowners and explain to them, you know, some of the items that we have to throw away, that they can't be salvaged, but other items that can be salvaged, you know, like any items that are plastic or hardwood that are exposed to the category three, you know, sewer backup. Those items can be cleaned and sanitized and dried out. But the ones that are more porous, they may be discarded.
Have you yet been in any homes in the Burlington area where we are talking about far more catastrophic flooding, I should think? I mean, the kind of flooding in which a river crests far above flood stage, and we have water gushing, you know, I should think, right into the front door of the home, and affecting much more than just the basement. Have you had to deal with any of that yet, or are you facing that in the next few days?
I think we might be facing that in the next few days or week, with getting out to the Burlington area. Like I said, we haven't gone to Burlington yet. We've been busy in the Kenosha area, taking care of the people in Kenosha. But what you're talking about in Burlington is what we did a lot with Hurricane Sandy, Hurricane Irene, where we were walking into homes that had a mud line 4 and 5 feet up on the walls, where you had to take out that entire wall and clean and sanitize the studs. And you were gutting a lot and you're disposing a lot. So that's what we have been used to on these trips that we've taken with different hurricanes that we supported. So I think when we get out there in Burlington, it'll be similar to those other trips that we've taken.
Mike Johnson and his wife, Jamie Johnson, are co-owners of The Dry Guys. We will have more of our conversation later in the week here on The Morning Show. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, a conversation with Carol Sabar, who heads up the computer center at Carthage College. And Carol is one of my favorite people to talk to when a complicated matter involving computers needs to be explained and explored. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about the matter of net neutrality. What is it, and why does it have so many people concerned? That is, the possibility that net neutrality may be a thing of the past. On Wednesday's program, Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College, with a very interesting program about robotics and the new way in